when you're watching the guys in like the kitchen, you know, cutting a pizza, you know, where they're just going at it like a conveyor belt.
Surgical precision.
But if you're gonna do it, you can't do it with like just like the hand roller. You gotta do it with like that two-handed chopper thing.
Oh, the big half moon fucking
That's definitely what I was thinking about.
just roll.
Like a batleth, Where you just do it, and then you just pivot, and then do it again, and then you keep,
But you gotta go fast, and you gotta go hard, so, like, you're banging the table, so you gotta be like,
Ryan, I don't go any other way, buddy.
Welcome back to the Trilateral Troika. This is Steve, along with the other Steve.
Dude, I think we just synced up perfectly, by the way. That was fucking weird.
And Ryan.
We're like women on our periods. Listen, did you know that in like the 60s, Chrysler, like the car company Chrysler, had a ballistic missile division to assist with the government during the Cold War?
Yep. They took the payload out and then they sold it as the 300M, which is a beautiful car.
Don't make them like that anymore, boys.
Seriously, you sit here and tell me that the 300M is not a beautiful, like, pimp, just nice car.
It's beautiful. That's when we were a country.
I mean,
when we were a country.
You're going to get 73 miles out of the transmission, but, you know, it's a great car.
Listen, remember what they took from us.
No, I like that it was 5 minutes after that bridge got taken down and people were posting that, like, this bridge will be here forever, just like the unions and everything else.
From wire? Yeah.
Oh, my God. Just like the Sabatkas.
Season 2 of The Wire was so underrated.
Yeah, that was season 3, I think.
Was it 3?
Season 2 is the union season.
Is it really?
Yeah, because season 3 is back when McNulty is on like the water as well.
That's right. You're right. Yeah. Cuz I was thinking at it cuz Chris from Murder Brian, the guys podcast, he's like obsessed with the union season, but I couldn't remember. I guess I thought it was 3.
It's a better season than you're expecting going in because it's such a whiplash from season 1.
I love the Greek. All that shit was amazing.
Best show on television.
Dude,
I mean, one of the best television shows ever written, and it was written by David Lynch, if I'm not mistaken, who did a whole bunch of like excellent shows. So,
well, you mean David Simon?
David Simon. David Lynch was
Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks.
I love the part in The Wire when it was like a psychedelic trippy like minefield and everyone was high and there was a midget. that's Jardakovsky's The Wire.
I like Snoop walking around in the hardware store looking for a nail gun to kill somebody with.
Oh my god, dude.
The so guy good. Helping him doesn't like realize and he's just like walking around just thugged out.
No, it wasn't to kill people though. It was to put the wood back up on the buildings because they kept going in and out of the vacants.
Yeah, but I thought he was gonna kill dude with the or torture dude with
it was where they hid the bodies.
I thought he was gonna torture the guy that they had in there waiting for him with it.
Nah, I think by the time you were in the vacants, they were just gonna shoot you. Like Chris was just gonna shoot you, you know.
Are you taking fucking notes on a criminal fucking conspiracy?
I saw someone post about it recently where Stringer's just trying to explain to them macroeconomics and they're just completely lost.
Supply and demand, motherfucker. Oh my god. Speaking of macroeconomics, who are we talking about this week?
Today, boys, we're going to be talking about animal trials.
No.
Animal trials.
I'm out.
are we talking about Animal Farm?
No, we're not.
We're talking about animals that are being put through legal or oftentimes not legal sort of trials and being sentenced punishments.
I thought you were talking about like books about dogs that finally learned how to sit, you know, trials.
This happened to a pig. I had a history teacher in high school who told us something like this, now that you say it like that, and I know there's a pig involved in this somehow.
This has actually happened to multiple pigs, and the first recorded instance of this, which I'll get to, was actually probably a pig. So animals throughout the centuries, they faced criminal charges, especially in Europe. The earliest record we have of an animal trial is most likely assumed to be one of an execution of a pig in 1266 at Fontenay-aux-Roses in France.
Fontaine?
No, Fontenay.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just going to go with the assumption that civil rights didn't extend to animals back then, huh?
I don't think civil rights really extended to anybody back then, but...
Civil rights don't extend to animals now. They're considered property in most states. Seriously.
You
can get in trouble for, animal abuse.
Animal cruelty and animal abuse?
You can get in trouble for that, but for a lot of stuff, it's just like, yeah.
Newer research, though, suggests that a trial might not have actually taken place. Despite that, these types of trials remained a part of legal systems until the 18th century. Animal defendants would appear before both church and secular courts, and offenses alleged against them range from murder to criminal damage.
Criminal damage?
Never mind. I'm going to figure this out. But how do you defend yourself?
What is criminal damage?
Well, criminal damage is like if a horse goes crazy and just breaks a bunch of stuff.
Oh, okay, I see.
That would be like criminal damage, because usually a lot of this is that murder is usually the most common one, because if someone dies, like the family needs something that gives them like restitution or legal recourse, and then they're just like, all right, so the horse is guilty of murder, we're gonna kill the horse.
So this is similar to that, like the lady that broke her ankle at her sister's house and then sued her nephew, right?
I'm innocent.
tap once for guilty, tap twice for not guilty.
Clop once for guilty.
But so this is like the lady that sued her nephew, right? Because she broke her ankle at their house and had to get restitution from the homeowner's insurance, but the only way to do that is to actually sue the nephew who's like 7. Right?
Well, it's not the same because you don't have that type of system here.
Mm-hmm.
It's all like they're like, well, you know, when he died, you know, there was nothing that could pay out, but maybe if this this pig here was to blame, we could pay out to you.
Oh man!
Human witnesses were often heard, and in ecclesiastical courts, the animals were routinely provided with lawyers.
Ecclesiastical courts.
Yeah, ecclesiastical courts.
Bro, can you imagine being an attorney, like a fresh, just graduated, just passed the bar, walking a court to defend your client first day, and it's a fucking pig sitting behind a table just looking at you?
Oh, no.
I mean,
I just like the idea that ecclesiastical courts were judging these things, you know, like priests.
I like the idea of a public defender just getting shit on all the time anyway, just by virtue of the job, walking in and seeing a pig and just be like, God, I just never thought it could get any worse, and yet here we are. What are the charges against the pig? Overeating. Fuck!
usually in secular courts, they were not provided lawyers, but neither were human defendants during this time. You had to provide your own. If they were convicted, it was usual for the animal to be executed or exiled. However, in 1750, a female donkey was acquitted of charges of bestiality due to witnesses to the animal's virtue and good behavior, while her co-accused human was sentenced to death, which we'll talk a little bit about that one later.
A female donkey,
what?
Also the known as a Kathy Griffin.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Terrible.
I was going to go to Sarah Jessica Parker, but that's fine.
Nah, I'm just trying to think of the most abhorrent. Even though people have done horrible shit to her in the media, just one of the most abhorrent people.
Real quick, how do you accuse the donkey of bestiality when the donkey doesn't really have a say so?
Shrek? Wait, what?
I'm not
the donkey walking around enticing this person.
I have said before on this podcast, you got to go into court with your argument. You know, I mean,
was the defense of
that
the
fucking
defendant.
Hussy. That hussy was walking around.
Yeah,
and she was asking for it,
and that's exactly that's you got to do. You got to shoot your shot in there, man, because that's it's either that or it's the Iron Maiden. So it's either that or it's Blood Eagle. You know.
Just,
Don't research Blood Eagle to our listeners. It's not a real thing, by the way, apparently. Yeah. It's not real,
it's
but...
like, it's like drop bears. Just don't look it up.
Yeah.
Translations of several of the most detailed accounts can be found in the work of E.P. Evans, the Criminal Prosecution and Capital Punishment of Animals, published in 1906.
Right, yeah, I've read that.
Right?
I celebrate you know,
you,
the
you told me you read that right after Tobin's Spirit Guide.
I did. I read, well, it was kind of, I started Tobin's, and then I got, like, a little bored, and then I just read that, so. And then I finished Tobin's later, because I felt, you know, yeah, you know how I am. I never finish anything.
The text references research by a Carl von Amira, who dealt with the matter from a jurisprudential approach to the work of Concilia made by the lawyer Bartholomew Chesney, defender of animals, more than once called to represent animals in the trials held.
So there was that guy. That's what you're known for. You defend animals in murder trials.
what's his name? Clarence Darrow of animals.
He's just Johnny Cochran of animals.
It makes me feel kind of better because that means that the animal nuts that I know in my life, they've been around since back then, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I've met some wacky freaking animal people, bro. Oh, my God.
All I have to say is PETA, okay? Like, they can be very...
I think PETA's, like, the extreme of one side of an argument, you know? Like, just, it doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Yeah, those are the animal people. Like, those are the extreme sometimes. Of the animal
No.
People,
yeah. I hate to correct you. I'm not thinking of PETA because I feel like they're way out there. I'm talking about those people who are like going down that same track and then they just diverge like at a fucking angle, you know? They're like way off there. Like my buddy back home, was my old boss. He married his wife and she flat out, he married his wife. Okay. She flat out said in the office one time, I just think animals are worth more than human beings. And we were just like, okay.
But he's not wrong. I just want to say that. He's not wrong.
She's
not wrong.
But then, like, she just kept getting more and more cats. Like, she had, like, seven cats. And then
now she's wrong.
And then two dogs. And it was just like, what is happening here? Like,
now she's wrong.
Oh, dude, it was...
That animals are worth more than humans is not an incorrect statement.
My buddy referred to her...
speaking about.
My buddy referred to her as a wet blanket. He said every time she's in the room, no one wants to be near it, no one touches it, and it kind of smells funny. I was like, oh no. That's the worst thing you can call anyone.
Did she smell?
No, she didn't smell, but she was kind of depressing to have in the room. She did not talk, and like it would just... She was just this stagnant entity. So like it was a pretty apt analogy.
She just taking up space.
Yeah. This is the same man who referred to everyone by various items of cloth.
What?
So like there was a bartender at one of the restaurants we went out to eat one time because they they wanted to go golfing, so I went with them because they were paying, and he called her a dish rag. I was
what?
Like, damn, man. A dish rag. Think how bad that is to call someone. You are the rag that sucks up the disgusting slop that's on the bar all night.
It as a personal point of pride to like when I insult people, I don't like try to insult them like being derogatory. I'll call them like a fucking eggplant, and it usually gets my point across because they're like, "Wait a minute, an eggplant?" I'm like, "Yeah, you're just fucking useless."
Yeah.
You're like second rate. You're mid tier. You're not good enough for
that's
like chicken
the British
farm.
You're the mode.
Eggplant farm.
I think that's the British mode of insult. Is you use a language like you can walk up to someone, you fucking vegetable lasagna. You
know? Fucking hilarious.
Yeah, it's good.
Or like if you're just trying to refer to this somebody, fucking, you just be like, "All right, sunglasses."
This fucking spanakopita.
You spanakopita. You bust that out. What's that? Oh, it's lovely. It's a Greek presentation of spinach in a pie form. It's delicious.
You'll love it.
Through Evans' research and analysis, we can find that there's special reference to Amira in a division made between Theristrophon, animal punishment, and Theroprocessa, animal trial.
Okay.
In Sadakat Kadri's The Trial, 4,000 Years of Courtroom Drama, published in 2006, it contains another detailed examination of the subject. Caudry shows that such trials of animals were often part of a broader state of affairs with prosecutions of corpses and inanimate objects, and argues that an echo of such rituals survives in modern attitudes towards the punishment of children and the mentally ill.
Wait, say that again?
Yeah, you heard him. You heard him.
Because the, like, much like a child or somebody who's, like, mentally ill to the point of incapable of, like, defending themselves, as part of fulfilling, like, sort of, like, legal obligations, they would put, like, an animal on trial. So it's not much different than that. Like, right. like say that if someone died and, like, a baby was like, the alleged to be the cause of it.
Maggie like if you put Simpson.
Yeah.
Goo goo gaga your ass all the way to the electric chair. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, when your pistol falls into the lap of Maggie Simpson and she ventilates you, that's, you know.
As long as Ryan had like a check and balance on his decisions, I would love him to be a judge. You know, especially high. Like, it would just be one of the funniest judges ever in history. And, you know, that's not what they're looking for judge, is funny. No, you know? Bro, like, they don't. Great. Like, you go to, like, judge. You go above, like, the hearing committee or whatever, and they go, but are you hilarious? Right? And
just like. But how funny was it? Because there's a
Google
point.
Google Gaga, your way to the electric chair, get the fuck out of here.
There's a point where you can get away with a lot of shit as long as you're funny, but it has to be legitimately funny.
You know?
If it's not funny, you're not going to get away with it, and you're going to probably get smacked down harder.
Every bit of his lead up to his first appointment, right, if you want to call it that, Trump, that is, was somewhat funny. Like, just hilarious. Politically hilarious. Like, how is this thing? Like, this has to be a skit. Is this an SNL skit? Like,
his deflections and his facial mannerisms and his tics.
And then, like, the weird shit that he
incredible.
Did. Like when they shined the lights on him and it was like, no, turn those lights off. Like, just weird stuff, right?
I love all Mexicans and Hispanics as he eats a Taco Bowl. And
well, he never, let's face it, that food never got in his hole, bro. He's not eating it in the photo.
It wasn't McDonald's, so he's not going to eat it.
Let me do some detective work here. Yeah, exactly. The reason why you know that was not being eaten is there was no bronzer on the fork, you know?
Oh, this guy just cracked the fucking
code. Open and shut case, Johnson.
Oh, Columbo over here.
Oh, and another thing, man.
Put him away, toys. Thing.
Book him, Dano.
Oh, man. Anyway.
So with trials of animals accused of killing humans, the criminal procedure had a lot of similarities to those of trials involving humans, in which the animal had to be arrested. They had to go through a trial hearing held by a secular court, and if they were found guilty of homicide, the animal often faced the death penalty.
They had to be arrested? Can you imagine the cop reading the Miranda rights to, like, a fucking cat? Cat ain't listening to you. Put the handcuffs on the cat, I dare you. He's gonna scratch the shit out of you.
There were no Miranda rights, Ryan.
Well, there aren't any more
you
either.
You have the right to be... That's true. You have the right to be murdered or sent abroad.
Take born that. Born too soon for flying cars. Born too late to live in the Middle Ages. Born just long enough to have to live under the dictation of the Miranda rights.
Oh, no.
The animals that were most often punished in these types of trials were usually pigs.
Unreal. Pigs. I feel like pigs constantly get the short end of the stick.
They get
they're like the dirty animals, and they won't eat them. Period.
They are,
like, bro. Have you had bacon? Get the fuck out of here.
They are disgusting. I mean, they'll eat whatever. You know, a pig will go through bone like butter.
Have you met human beings?
No, I know, but, you know, I was just quoting one of my favorite movies of all time, Snatch.
I'm just saying, like, they constantly get the bad rap. Even in stories, even in books. Like I said, like Animal Farm. Weren't the pigs supposed to be like Stalin or some shit like that? Or like the...
Napoleon, the pig?
It was an allegory for the Russian Revolution.
You're blowing Ryan's mind now. I thought it was just a story about animals.
No. Like four legs good, two legs bad. Like, trust me, I remember Animal Farm.
I know you know. I'm just because of the way Steve
couldn't remember
answered
who the
you.
Pigs represented
because of the way Steve answered you. It sounded like he was making sure that you were aware that it was an allegory.
Ryan, it wasn't a book just about a farm.
I hate what they did to that pig.
The farmer's such an asshole.
Oh, I just hate the way they hopped on Pop.
It's not fair what they did to Old Major.
Justice for Old Major.
Oh, man.
So in the same way, in these trials of pigs, it was not only the main perpetrator of the crime who was recognized, but also so-called accomplices. Mm. In the case of the village of Saint Marcel Le Ussay, in 1379, in which two herds of pigs were said to have rioted and expressed their approval of an infanticide committed by other pigs. Although the pigs found guilty of homicide were sentenced to execution, thanks to the request of the owner of the two herds, to the Duke of Burgundy, the animals accused of complicity were pardoned.
The Duke of Kent.
So the pigs did...
They did a murder.
They did do a murder, right?
Yes, and then when the other pigs, went on a rampage, they tried to claim, the pigs are in on it. They know what's up.
I mean, that's nothing's changed even from today. Like, if a dog mauls and kills somebody, that dog's getting put down. But, we're going to kill the other pigs, too, because they look like they were excited about it. Like, okay, guys. Guys, take a step back.
And a lot of these, too, are they take place in France. Really? Or sort of, in the periphery of France. Because that was also, the most populated area of, Western Europe at that time. Mm-hmm. So a lot of stuff, France is going to be sort of the cultural center point of Europe during that period in Western Europe. And it's also going to have a lot of influence on stuff like that because there's so many people there.
Just right. Culturally relevant, putting handcuffs on pigs and putting them on the witness stand.
There were
clap the irons on Oinky. We're out.
Hey, I want to cross-examine Babe over there. witness, I'm calling Charlotte to the stand. Get up there, bitch. Draw me a web.
Oh my god, draw me a web.
Spell us in your words what happened.
Tell us in silk. How did
6 days
happen?
Later they're just finished with the first question.
Yeah.
The prosecution's just like, now you write that he is a good pig, but how good of a pig could he be?
That's a very intricate answer, ma'am, and we're all happy that you're here.
Would you like to elaborate on that?
Other animals that were also convicted during this period were donkeys, horses, cows, bulls, and mules.
Nice.
It was everything in my power not to be like, donkey, when he said it.
Sure. Almost always, when animals were put on trial, they were usually domesticated ones, or they would sometimes include pests such as rats and weevils.
I can get behind the rats. Maybe the weevils. But why were they always domesticated animals?
Usually because they're around people, like farm animals, like a pig or a cow.
So they're just a convenient scapegoat?
Well, one, they probably did the crime, alleged crime, and then, they're not going anywhere because, they live in, the pen or whatever where they, stomp the guy to death.
Gotcha, okay.
Because, if a boar, kills a man in the forest, the boar's just going to run off. He's not going to hang around and wait for, the constabulary to show
up. Right. Right.
So according to Johannes Gross and Kurz in the Kurz Basler Chronic in 1624, in 1474, a rooster was put on trial in the city of Basel.
Is that a Dr. Gray album? Yo, we got
goddamn, he still hasn't released the aftermath.
Johannes Gross. And the something city of Chronic.
For the quote-unquote, the heinous and unnatural crime of laying an egg, which the townspeople were concerned was spawned by Satan and contained a cockatrice.
Some people have said that about my farts, and... Come on, so that was good.
They're upset that a rooster laid an egg?
Yes, because they said it was unnatural.
Wait till they hear about the Batmobile losing its wheel.
Bro. Okay, so totally, very, very loosely related.
I would expect nothing less.
Listen, I was at work the other night, and in each room in the ER, you have a television in the room, so you can watch TV while you're sitting
there. Oh, shit, I gotta go get
a 6-hour workup. right? So generally speaking, because of the area that I work in, a lot of the time when I walk into these rooms, the patient has turned the television on to Fox News. So I got to listen to it for a few minutes.
It's like when I go to Dunkin' Donuts, dude. Absolutely. Right?
So one night, the other night, it was Saturday night, I walked in there to a room and I was talking to the patient, and it was Jesse Waters on the Fox 5. Okay, and if you know who he is, great. If not, I'm not going to explain it. He's just—he's a Fox suit-wearing dickhead.
He's a moron,
dickhead. Correct. However, I didn't catch the whole part of it, but they had just come back from commercial break, and they're going to commercial break, and he was making a joke about like the whole like he is risen, right? Like he was making a joke about that, and it was right before Easter, so it kind of caught my attention. I was like, wait a minute, Fox is making jokes about Easter, and instead of saying. Because he started off by saying, oh, you know, he is risen. And then he kind of caught himself and jokingly was like, oh, I don't know. Maybe in today's climate, maybe it's she has risen. Maybe it's they have risen.
Oh, no.
And it was unironically, listen to me, it was unironically, like, the funniest fucking thing I have ever heard off Fox News. Because in that moment, you are not denigrating a minority. You are not punching down. You're just kind of making a topical joke on the current state of the climate. Like, he, she, they, them.
Yeah, I could see.
But the way he did it, I was like, holy fucking shit. Fox actually made a funny fucking joke, not trying to be racist, not trying to be transphobic or anything like that.
Yeah.
And it kind of made me chuckle. And then I was like sick to my stomach for like 30 minutes because I was like, Fox made me chuckle unironically.
Dude, I've definitely spit my coffee out of Dunkin' Donuts before.
Generally speaking, 99.9% of the time, if you try to make a joke like that, you're going to be punching down. Somehow, this mouth-breathing, knuckle-dragging idiot made a joke that was pretty fucking funny and was not punching down. I was like, all right, okay, all right.
That's so strange.
It's broken clock theory 100%.
To give an instance of a modern case of an animal going to trial, Katya the bear, who was a female bear native to Kazakhstan, was imprisoned in 2004 after being found guilty of mauling two people in separate incidents.
Hello, yes, I am Kazakh Bear. Why are you putting me in ankle iron? I maul you, you know.
Is this the one they did a video of on, like, the talk show?
Yo, how do you try a bear, though? Like, how do you get it up on the witness stand?
Very carefully.
I'm not entirely sure, but the bear was eventually held in archaic prison in Kostanay.
right down the hall from the Joker and Two-Face in Arkham prison.
The bear was released from imprisonment and allowed to congregate with other bears after serving a 15-year sentence.
I mean, technically, prison today is still just a big congregation of bears and cubs.
Jesus Christ. Do you think that she was institutionalized when she got out?
Well, her handlers report that she is socializing well with other bears. After her period of imprisonment.
Yeah, away from every other bear that she's ever known. Now she's getting like, all right, we'll let you back. Of course she'd be socializing well. Guys, don't let him take me again. Again, is this the bear that attacked the guy on the news, like, or on the talk show? Because there's a well-known clip, and I want to say it's from the 90s, maybe. But the bear, like, starts mauling her handler, like, on this talk show, and I want to say it's Russia.
That's a pretty common one.
Is that this one, or is that
I don't,
is just
I don't
so
think it's that
name?
Bear.
Okay.
I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm just going to say that, that large predator animals maul people pretty regularly on, like, the news in Russia.
Well, these large predator animals need to remember who the apex predator is. Humans. With our soft, supple bodies and sweet meat. And defenseless.
To give an instance of a death penalty trial involving an animal, but also like sort of like a civil trial, was in September of 2015. PETA sued David Slater, a photographer, on behalf of a monkey named Naruto.
What? What the fuck?
Believe it.
Yeah.
I absolutely believe it. If it's 2015,
this guy's never seen any Naruto.
It's true. So what had happened was Naruto had taken selfies of himself, and the photographer had published them. And what PETA had argued was that Naruto was actually the owner of the copyright on his own photos.
Oh yeah, I remember this case. Okay.
The judge would dismiss the case, ruling that the monkey did not have legal standing. PETA would try to appeal the ruling, but the appeal was rejected on April 23rd, 2018.
I always thought it was very cut and dry that it's your camera, it's your film, you own the images that are on that film, assuming that you took those images in a public place, even if it was a monkey that ran up and took a selfie. Hmm. Which, and if you've never seen it, it's a cool fucking photo. Like, it's actually a really good picture.
Hmm.
And I just, I never understood why you would sue to be like, no, it's not your photo. Like, it's his camera. It's his film. He developed it. He did everything. And the monkey just happened to be the one that hit the shutter. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, again, my my court theory is whatever you think is going to work in there, I mean, you just go for it. Especially if you have no argument, you know?
In America, yes. In other actual civilized countries, no.
I think in America, too, you can get in trouble for that because it can be like, the judge can consider your defense like moot or something.
So you can actually get in trouble in the American legal system for like basically wasting the court's time.
Yeah.
But it takes, it is hard.
You got to be like a sovereign citizen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to be actively trying to get that done to you.
Who is the offended party? The state of Michigan.
Yeah, you have to be Alex Jones.
Exactly. The state of Michigan can't represent itself here. It's not a real thing. Okay. All right, buddy. Sit down.
We're done hearing from you now.
According to local folklore, a monkey was allegedly hanged in Hartlepool, England.
What?
The story goes that during the Napoleonic Wars, a French ship was wrecked in a storm off the coast of Hartlepool. The only survivor of the ship was a monkey, allegedly dressed in a French army uniform to provide amusement for the crew. When the monkey was found on the beach, some locals decided to hold an impromptu trial since the monkey was unable to answer their questions and because they had seen neither a monkey nor a Frenchman before, they concluded that the monkey must be a French spy.
Oh my god.
Bro, are you fucking out? These goddamn fucking Brits, I swear to god, they get worse every story I hear.
Being found guilty, the animal was sentenced to death and was hanged on the beach.
You're kidding me, right?
Everyone showed up. They had sandwiches.
The colloquial name for a resident of Hartlepool is a monkey hanger.
Oh, yeah. Let me write that down for next time I'm overseas. You end up in fucking England. Hey, you monkey hanger.
To get back to our story of a man in a trial involving a donkey, Jacques Ferron was a Frenchman who was hanged, or was tried and hanged in 1750. For copulation with a female donkey, which is referred to as a Jenny.
Oh, well, I didn't know that they refer to as Jennies. If you call it a Jenny, how could he resist?
The trial took place in the commune of Vanves, and Ferron was found guilty and sentenced to death by hanging. In cases such as these, it was usual that the animal would also be sentenced to death, but in this case, the Jenny was acquitted. The court decided that the animal was a victim and had not participated of her own free will.
Holy shit, they finally had some sense about him. Okay.
A document dated September 19, 1750 was submitted to the court on behalf of the Jenny that attested to the virtuous nature of the animal. Signed by the parish priest and other notable residents of the commune, it proclaimed that they were willing to bear witness that she is in word and deed and in all her habits of life a most honest creature.
Good. Good. I'm glad that they saved the ass. That's what donkeys are called, asses.
I know.
Animal trials would also condemn pests for the crime of killing crops in order to expel them.
What?
An ecclesiastical tribunal had to resort to other types of questions and techniques to judge them, so they requested the intervention of the church to begin with the pertinent metaphysical actions such as exorcism and incantations, having as their main element the holy water.
They're like going down spraying crops like with insecticide just out of a huge tank
with
holy water.
Come try to spray my crops.
It's just coming out of like one of them like gigantic 350-gallon just tanks. It just says holy water with a big cross on the side.
Check it out.
Yeah, keep praying. Yeah, Orkin Man's here to save you. Yeah, bye-bye.
Evans, in the previously mentioned text, collects several techniques of conjuration used against the plague. There's also a treatise that's mentioned by Cassianos Bassos, a Byzantine Bithynian who lived during the 10th century, in which he describes step-by-step a recipe to finish off the field of mice who were asked to leave fields on pain of cutting them into 7 pieces.
7 pieces? Do you know how small a field mount? Never mind.
Wait, 7 pieces?
A field mouse? You know how small a field mouse is?
Yeah, it's like the size of a goddamn mini Milky Way bar.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you get like a system going, you know, you have one of those like pizza cutter, like.
Oh my god.
Like a stamp, you just push them through.
You know, when you're watching the guys in like the kitchen, you know, cutting a pizza, you know, where they're just going at it like a conveyor belt.
Surgical precision.
But if you're gonna do it, you can't do it with like just like the hand roller. You gotta do it with like that two-handed chopper thing.
Oh, the big half moon fucking
Klingon, the big half moon.
Yeah, that's definitely what I was thinking about. just roll. You just do that, like a batleth, yeah. Where you just do it, and then you just pivot, and then do it again, and then you keep, yeah.
But you gotta go fast, and you gotta go hard, so like you're banging the table, so you gotta be like,
Ryan, I don't go any other way, buddy. Oh, man. That's why I suck at Tai Chi. Running through it.
You go to yoga, the whole class is just staring at you like, you
look at him, dude, he's just pushing it to the limit over there.
He's just dancing. He's not
doing Hey, buddy, this isn't the final countdown, all right? Your heart's going to be on fire if you don't slow down.
Yeah, hotter than it already is, because this is hot yoga. Please relax, sir.
Just doing extra hot yoga. It's found that the animals most judged through this kind of process were rats, locusts, mice, snails, weevils, flies, bumblebees, caterpillars, and other kinds of insects, or quote-unquote vermin, that attack crops or vineyards, according to the explanations of the church for "quote unquote" instigation of Satan.
As I've said several times in the last week, I don't know why. I think I heard it on another show, but Nietzsche said morality has an aesthetic component. If you kill a cockroach, you're a hero. If you kill a butterfly, people will kill you.
You're a monster.
Yeah. So they
Did you
picked
say snails.
So they picked all the things that were like gross or like that were a bother to them and started holding them in contempt of court. Like, what the fuck is that?
So they would hold snails on trial. You think they picked them up when they went to like examine them or like put them on the witness stand? Like,
all right,
Think that it took two days
okay,
for him to like crawl over?
No, seriously. Before we go there, all right, is it even remotely possible that this is not representative of, like, the people at the time? That this was more of, like, a, like some kind of, like, psychopath in power that was,
Knowing
like, forcing
what I know
policies?
Of the people at the time, which is admittedly not a lot, I'm going to say the people at the time agreed with this shit.
Because I feel like the people at the time, like, what year is this?
We're talking about throughout, like, the Middle Ages up until, like, the Renaissance up until the modern era.
Yeah, so most of these people are trying.
They hung a monkey because they've never seen a Frenchman.
Right. So most of these people, I believe. Yeah, that sounds political. Like, it just doesn't sound like something people would do, even stupid people, because most of these people were probably a little over-concerned with eating food and staying away from illness. And so, like, you know, it just seems, I don't know, it seems questionable.
You think, like, the church did it because the church is usually held in a place.
Oh, I mean, if you give me a choice,
just to like solidify their position.
If you give me a choice, whether or not average people did something stupid like that or the church, I pick the church. Fucking 6 out of 7 days a week.
That is incredible, bro.
Well,
you need to work with the public more. The public is so fucking stupid.
I know the
bro.
Public's stupid. I'm just talking about when it's like ludicrous stuff. If you give me the option of choosing the church, I'm gonna pick that first, whether I'm wrong or right.
Okay.
The church is fucking ridiculous.
According to Evans' compilation, which covers trials from the 8th century until the early 20th century, he delves into them that the trials covered matters of metaphysical, religious, legal, and legislative issues that led humans to make these judgments against animals.
Okay. What does that mean?
Good point.
So when an animal was accused of committing a crime against a human being or against his property, he was often assigned a lawyer to defend him during the trial.
Okay.
The Israeli
defenders.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Like I said, imagine being an unpaid or a low paid public defender to walk in to see your clients a pig. You're just like, fuck.
The Israeli academic Esther Cohen remarked on the advocate role when Animal was called to trial, who constantly used procedural figures to exempt the possibility of continuing with the process as an example of the objection for lack of jurisdiction, since the animal could not commit crimes as they were incapable before the law. Another option for the defense was to argue that the notification was not made in accordance with the law, since they were directed directly against locusts, rats, or other insects who did not have the will, much less the possibility of making use of reason to appear at a trial. The trials and arguments of the defense sometimes alluded to the role of animals in the world according to theology, such as the case of Thomas Aquinas, who indicated that there should not be such judgments because animals were creations of God, and in the sense if an earthly judge accused them of committing crimes, they were going against the divine will.
All right, Tommy Aquinas, listen, dickhead. That means that you or me can physically not commit crimes either, because I am made in God's own image, which means that if you try to, like, arrest me for committing a crime, you're going against the divine will because I'm made in his own image, right?
You probably had to work around for that angle, but...
Star, unless you're human.
One notable animal defendant we'll talk about is Topsy.
Topsy?
Topsy. Yes. Wasn't that the name of...
It was an elephant, right?
No, wasn't that...
Yes, Topsy was an elephant.
Wasn't that the name of a character in King of the Hill? Like, one of, like...
Yeah, one of Cotton's, yeah, like, Cotton's, like, gang of people.
War buddies, yeah. Show him, Topsy!
I think he was the one that didn't have any teeth.
Yeah, exactly.
Topsy was born in the wild around 1875 in Southeast Asia, and was captured soon after by elephant traders. Adam Forepaugh, owner of the Forepaugh Circus, had the elephant secretly smuggled into the United States with plans that he would advertise the baby as the first elephant born in the United States. Mm-hmm. At that time, the Forepaugh Circus was in competition with Barnum and Bailey Circus over who had the most and largest elephants. The name Topsy came from a slave girl in the novel Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Good lord, dude, this country's so fucking gross.
Forepaugh would announce to the press on February of 1877 that his circus now boasted the only baby elephant ever born on American soil. The elephant trader who sold Topsy to Forepaugh also sold elephants to P.T. Barnum and tipped Barnum off about the deception. Barnum exposed the hoax publicly, and Forepaugh stopped claiming that Topsy was born in the United States, only advertising that she was the first elephant born outside a tropical zone.
So, real quick, I just typed Topsy into Google. Don't do that. Make sure you
is
write
it like
Topsy
an old
elephant
disease or something? Like, die to the ruffling Topsy.
Just put Topsy elephant, but they have Topsy the elephant's occupation listed as circus performer, and I immediately just close that off, because go fuck yourself. Go fuck yourself, okay? Circus performer. She's a fucking elephant! Sorry.
When she came to maturity, Topsy was 10 feet high and 20 feet long, with claims that she weighed between 4 and 6 short tons, so around 3.6 and 5.4 long tons, and about 3.6 and 5.4 metric tons. Over the years, she gained a reputation as a quote-unquote bad elephant. In 1902, another event brought her again to prominence. She killed a spectator, James Fielding Blunt, in Brooklyn, New York, at what was then the Forepaugh and Sells Brothers Circus. Accounts vary as to what happened, But the common story is that on the morning of May 27th, 1902, a possibly drunk Blunt wandered into the menagerie tent where all the elephants were tied in a line and began teasing them in turn, offering them a bottle of whiskey. He reportedly threw sand in Topsy's face and then burnt the extremely sensitive tip of her trunk with a lit cigar.
Kill him. Fuck him.
Yeah.
Zero empathy for this dude.
They didn't,
kill him.
They didn't, that's not what they said, like, immediately when he did that. He should have been, like, taken out back and fucking beat the shit out of.
No, no, fuck it. Kill him. No. Well, Topsy did good. She should have got a medal.
Well, Steve, you're onto something there because Topsy threw Blunt to the ground with her trunk and then crushed him with either her head, knees, or foot.
Good.
Or some combination of all of them.
Unbelievable.
Good. Good.
Newspaper reports of Blunt's death contained what seemed to be exaggerated accounts of Topsy's man-killing past, with claims that she killed up to 12 men, but with more common accounts that during the 1900 season, she had killed two Forepaugh and Sells Brothers circus workers, one in Paris, Texas, and one in Waco, Texas. A journalist, Michael Dowley, in his 2013 book on Topsy, could find no record of anyone being killed by an elephant in Waco. A handler named Mortimer Ladeau of Albany, New York, was attacked by Topsy in Paris, Texas, and suffered injuries, but Dowley could not find a record of him dying from them. The publicity generated by Topsy's actions brought very large crowds to the circus to see the elephant. In June of 1902, during the unloading of Topsy from a train in Kingston, New York, a spectator named Louis Dondero used a stick in his hand to, quote-unquote, tickle Topsy behind the ear. Topsy seized Dondero around the waist with her trunk, hoisted him high in the air, and threw him back down before being stopped by the handler.
Listen, at the risk of sounding like a PETA member, why can't they just leave these fucking animals alone? Why do you have to have him over here? Let that fucking animal go back wherever the fuck he came from.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we grew up with a much different mindset, but I actually kind of feel like most people probably felt that way.
Because I know, like, I know this story. I know how this ends, and it's not, it's actually really bad. Like, it's not great. And it's just like, why, it's, you know, you brought this on yourself. You could have just left the elephant where she was instead of smuggling her to the United States to make money, and none of this would have happened.
Mm.
But, oh God, it's so just...
Due to this last incident, the owners of the Forepaugh and Sell Circus decided to sell Topsy. Topsy was sold in June of 1902.
They put out an ad in Auto Trader. It was just a 1 10-foot-high, extremely violent car.
Well-maintained, oil change every 6,000 miles.
It's not a domestic, it's a foreign.
They let her out at that one auto auction.
Big Bill Hell.
Yeah. Topsy was sold in June of 1902 to Paul Boyton, owner of Coney Island's Sea Lion Park, and added to the menagerie of animals on display there. The elephant's handler from Forepaugh, William Whitey Ault, came along with Topsy to work at the park. A bad summer season in competition with the nearby Steeplechase Park made Boyton decide to get out of the amusement park business. At the end of the year, he leased Sea Lion Park to Frederick Thompson and Elmer Dundee, who proceeded to redevelop it into a larger attraction and renamed it Luna Park. Topsy was used in the publicity for the park, moving timbers, and even the fanciful airship Luna, part of the amusement ride a trip to the moon from Steeplechase to Luna Park, characterized in the media as a quote-unquote penance for her rampaging ways.
A penance.
Penance.
Okay.
Penance.
There's a penis.
Not to be confused with Michael Penis.
God damn it.
During the moving of the Luna in October of 1902, Andor William Ault was involved in an incident where he stabbed Topsy with a pitchfork, trying to get her to pull the amusement ride.
When I say Luna, what's the first thing you guys think of?
The moon?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I immediately think of Mortal Kombat 2, the pit, trying to get Reptile, you know?
Oh,
anytime someone says fuck. That, the first thing I hear is look to La Luna, you know? Like,
wow, that just tickled the memory.
I know,
for
you're going to
wow.
have to watch some South Americans play Mortal Kombat games on TikTok. Dude, it is every fucking Saturday morning I turn on TikTok live because it's fucking weird. And there's just the weirdest shit going on there because it's nighttime in Asia and it's fucking weird here. And there are so many people from like Mexico and South America playing Mortal Kombat and variants of Mortal Kombat, like hacked versions of it.
Really?
It's ridiculous. I follow at least five people, I think, that are just playing nonstop live.
Like old Mortal Kombat or like Mortal Kombat, like
old
X,
Mortal
like
Kombat, new Mortal Kombat, and then like these hacked versions that have like 100 characters and, you know.
Oh, that's sick.
They look like Mugen, kind of the weird custom fighting game.
I don't really fuck with TikTok too heavy at all, so
I've fallen off
too. On Twitch.
Yeah, you can find
it on Twitch.
I don't think they'll be on Twitch. You can't stream that kind of stuff, I don't think, generally on Twitch.
Why not?
I think sometimes with ROMs and stuff, aren't they weird with that?
Not really.
No, I thought they were.
I feel like if you were making money off of them somehow,
TikTok's
like making money outside of like bits and donations.
Yeah. If you have 1,000 people like watching and you're playing an obviously hacked ROM, they're going to be like, "Yeah, that's not cool."
Exactly.
Like,
but TikTok probably
like,
won't do that.
Well, for instance, like Twitch plays Pokemon. That's very obviously a hacked ROM.
You know what? You got me. That's a good point. I didn't even think about that. I thought they just had like multiplayer PC user typed command support in the original Pokemon.
On the Game Boy.
They were very forward thinking. Yeah, you had to have the Link cable and you got and you needed 100,000 AA batteries.
you had to plug it into the gas powered accessory that Nintendo sold at the time.
Yeah,
Game Boy generator.
Dad, I'm trying to play Game Boy. All right, son, I'll be right there. I just got off work. All right, he throws his shoulder out, pulling that fucking thing.
Buying it Sears.
A Nintendo peripheral that needs a premium gas.
They got to set you down.
Just
to
high
talk.
Octane.
Your parents have to set you down to talk about it. Carter's got the gas prices going up. Well, wait, Game Boy. Bush has the gas prices going up, son, okay?
Oh, fuck.
So after Alt is confronted by the police, Alt turns Topsy loose from a work harness to run free in the streets leading to Alt's arrest.
That's fucking hilarious.
The occurrence was
a petty piece of shit.
The occurrence was attributed to his heavy drinking.
Leading to her arrest or his arrest?
His arrest.
So what happened to Topsy?
I think she just got sent back to the park.
It's awesome.
In December of 1902, a drunk Alt rode Topsy down the streets of Coney Island and walked or tried to ride Topsy into the local police station. Accounts say Topsy tried to batter her way through the station door, and then she, quote-unquote, she set up a terrific trumpeting, leading to the officers to take refuge in the cells. After this incident, Alt was fired.
Jesus Christ.
Without Alt to handle Topsy, the owners of Luna Park, Frederick Thompson and Elmer Dundee, claimed they could no longer handle the elephant and tried to get rid of her, but they could not even give her away, and no other circus or zoo would take her. And on December 13, 1902, Luna Park press agent Charles Murray released a statement to the newspapers that Topsy would be put to death within a few days by electrocution. At least one local paper noted that the steady drone of events and reports regarding Topsy from the park had the hallmarks of a publicity campaign designed to get the new park continually mentioned in the papers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, it gets dark, bro. It's going to get darker than this.
I'm a big animal guy, and the worst thing that happened to me,
story.
I think, with animals was I worked at a pharmaceutical company, well, I will not name. I worked at several because I was an outside contractor, and and they had a vivarium. And we had to go in there to a vivarium, if you're not sure, it's where they keep live animals for testing. and we had to go in there to run in some monitoring points. Not for the animals, but for, like, the refrigeration units and stuff.
Right, right.
And I told my boss no, initially. I was like, absolutely not. I was like, I'm not doing that. I mean, you can fire me, but you're sending me another job site because I'm not going in there. Because when you got close to the door, all you could hear were, like, animals screaming.
Yeah, because they know.
And the thing is I thought it was really bad. And what they did is they had the researcher take me through the vivarium to show me that, like, they weren't, like, hurting the animals. It was just, they were, you know, and they were actually living in okay conditions. But I was, so I ended up, like, saying, I'll go in, but I'm not going in any of the rooms. Like, I will help you run a cable down. Because I felt like, you know, we were going to be monitoring their food supplies and stuff. So it's like, you know, I'm doing some form of good, I guess. But after that job, I refused to go in that part of that thing. I'm like, you send somebody else. I'm never going in there again.
Well, Steve, I have some bad news about the rest of Topsy's existence on this
project. Oh, no, I'm sure it's going to be absolutely horrendous. I mean, it does bring up that conversation of what do? Like, if a dog, let's say it's a dog, right? Like, we'll even go stupid and we'll be like prejudicial. We'll say it's a pit bull, right? It's violent except for like certain people. Or let's say it hates men, because I've dealt with those types of dogs before.
Right.
What do? Do you allow that dog even the chance of mauling someone just accidentally? Or do you put it down?
Well, I feel like in a case like that, you could have like a judge or a magistrate sign off of if you wanted a woman and wanted to adopt it to say, hey, listen, the dog's got one chance. It has a known history of being violent and aggressive. If the dog's not aggressive with women, you seem to get along with it. You have one chance. If the dog mauls somebody, it's going to be put down.
But I understand people who say
put down reasonably and humanely.
Yeah, I mean, that's too. But, like, I just mean, like, put down... Like, I kind of understand the perspective of someone who would be like, nah, I want to put that dog down. You know?
And I mean, it's the exact same thing as a human being right now.
At the same time,
But if you're a violent person, you get put down.
At the same time, I respect what you're saying. You know, I think that's probably how most people would handle it, but, yeah. Anyway, so...
I mean, how are they fucking up my girl,
Topsy?
It's not good.
It's a girl, right? She's a girl, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
On January 1st, 1903... Thompson and Dundee announced plans to conduct a public hanging of the elephant.
Hanging?
Set for January 3rd or 4th and collect a 25 cents a head admission to see
the spectacle. What fucking year is this and what are they hanging it with?
1900, right? And remember,
1903.
1903, and a couple days ago they said that they were going to electrocute her.
Dude, I can understand.
I can understand
electrocution, right? But like, hanging?
Yeah. Yeah.
How much does it...
Wait
a minute.
It's worse.
Google.
I told you it gets worse.
Elephant average weight. Wait, let's see. Elephant average. You said it was...
She's at most 5.6 tons.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
She weighs as much as a couple Buicks.
The site they chose was
the best engine ever made.
The fucking LeSabre.
It was the best engine ever made, dude.
The site they chose was an island in the middle of the lagoon for the Old Shoot the Chute ride, where they were building the centerpiece for their new park, a 200-foot electric tower. The structure had reached the height of 75 feet at the time of the killing. Press agent Murray arranged media coverage and posted banners around the park in all four sides of the makeshift gallows advertising. Opening May 2nd, 1903, Luna Park... $1 million exposition, the heart of Coney Island. On hearing Thompson and Dundee's plans, the president of the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, John Peter Haynes, stepped in and forbade the hanging as a quote-unquote needlessly cruel means of killing Topsy, and also told Thompson and Dundee that they could not conduct a public spectacle and charge admission.
What's the point of killing her then?
Jesus Christ. That's the animal guy there, folks. That's the guy who's the animal guy.
Man, if you can't charge a fee, dude, this is capitalism land.
If I can't make money off this shit.
Thompson and Dundee discussed...
My favorite... that's what I was thinking of this whole time. It's like one of my favorite George Orwell things. Because 1984 I didn't really like, but I hate to sound like I'm a deep track guy here, but Shooting an Elephant, you ever read that essay?
Yeah.
Not.
It's fucking crazy. It's very, very
surprise, good. Surprise, I have not read that essay.
Yeah. I'll send it to you. It's online. Obviously, it's free now. But it's definitely worth reading.
Is it about shooting an elephant?
You need to read it.
Because I got some interesting news for, because I don't know, the way that you it's called shooting an elephant. I asked that because there's a video called electrocuting an elephant. So
no, it's not like that, dude.
Okay.
Thompson and Dundee discussed alternatives with Haynes, going over methods used in previous attempts to euthanize elephants, including poisoning. But that as well as a 1901 attempt to electrocute an elephant named Jumbo, 2 years earlier in Buffalo, New York, were botched.
I thought you just said Jumbo 2.
Yes, the name of the elephant was Jumbo 2.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
That's great. What happened to Jumbo 1?
You don't even want to know.
Gunned down in her prime.
Trash cans.
Yeah.
Killed by Mr. Gatling and his gun.
After negotiations, which included Thompson and Dundee trying to give the elephant to the ASPCA, a method of strangling the elephant with large ropes tied to a steam-powered winch was agreed upon. They also agreed they would use poisoning and electricity as well.
Woo! The triple threat, baby.
Oh, God, fuck, you disgusting. Don't need to cast that many spells, all right? Good God.
The date of Topsy's demise was finally sent for Sunday, January 4th, 1903.
You cast Knights of the Round already. Casting Ifrit and Shiva on top of that is just overkill.
Oh, exactly.
The press attention the event had received brought out an estimated 1,500 spectators and 100 press photographers, as well as agents of the ASPCA, to inspect the proceedings.
Okay, so 25 cents a head, we'll say 1,500 people actually paid, because we won't say that they charged the press. $375?
Yeah, then you times that by like 1,000, and then you put it in today's money.
Today's money costs $300,000 to be there.
Oh, fuck.
Thompson and Dundee also allowed 100 spectators into the park, although more climbed through the park fence. Many more were on the balconies and roofs of nearby buildings, which were charging admission to see the event. The electric tower had been re-rigged with large ropes set up to strangle the elephant, which were inspected by the ASPCA agents to make sure they conformed to what had been agreed. The details of the electrocution part of the execution were handled by workers from the local power company, Edison Electric Illuminating Company of Brooklyn, under the supervision of chief electrician P.D. Sharkey. They spent the night.
At least he has an appropriate name for this time period and what the fuck he's doing. P.D. Sharkey.
They spent the night before stringing power lines from the Coney Island Electrical Substation 9 blocks to the park to carry alternating current they planned to redirect from a much larger plant in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. At Bay Ridge, the staff was told to, quote-unquote, get an engine ready and clear a feeder and bus to Coney Island Station.
I have no idea what that sentence means.
Essentially means that they had to, like DJ Khaled, they had to turn on the good servers for Topsy.
Gotcha. Okay.
Topsy was held out of her pen into the unfinished Luna Park by Carl Goliath, an expert on elephants who formerly worked for animal showman Carl Hagenbeck.
I would have been more impressed if he said Carl Goliath, an incredibly large man.
I'm sure he was, and I'm sure he also had a large, like, handlebar mustache.
Twirling
this, okay, so this is the worst part of the story, though, right here, because there's, like, a picture of her refusing to come out of her pen or some shit like that, and the head's, like, she knew what the fuck was about to happen. Like, the elephant's not stupid.
Well, Ryan, I'm just about to get to that. Newspaper accounts of the events noted that Topsy refused to cross the bridge over the lagoon, ignoring prodding by Goliath and even bribes of carrots and apples.
Yeah, bro. Oh, God, it's so fucking gross.
The owners of Luna Park then tried to get William Ault, who had not watched the killing, to lead Topsy across the bridge, but he declined an offer of $25 to coax her to her death, saying he would not for $1,000.
Good for him.
They finally gave up trying to get Topsy across the bridge and decided to, quote-unquote, bring death to her. The steam engine, ropes, and the electrical lines were re-rigged to the spot where Topsy stood. The electricians attached copper line sandals connected to AC lines to Topsy's right forefoot and left hind foot so the charge would flow through the elephant's body. The chief electrician, Sharky, making sure everyone was clear, Topsy was fed carrots laced with 460 grams of potassium cyanide by press agent Charles Murray and then backed away. At 2:45 p.m., Sharky gave a signal and an electrician on a telephone told the superintendent at Coney Island Station 9 blocks away to close a switch, and Luna Park chief electrician Hugh Thomas closed another one at the park, sending 6,600 volts from Bay Ridge across Topsy's body for 10 seconds, toppling her to the ground.
Oh my God.
According to at least one contemporary account, she died, quote-unquote, without a trumpet or a groan. After Topsy fell, the steam-powered winch tightened two nooses placed around her neck for 10 minutes. At 2:47, Topsy was pronounced dead.
I just want to point in to say they sent 6,600 volts. It's not volts to kill you, it's amperage, but I digress. Go ahead.
An ASPCA official and two veterinarians employed by Thompson and Dundee determined that the electric shock had killed Topsy. During the killing, the superintendent of Coney Island Station, Joseph Johansson, became, quote-unquote, mixed up in the apparatus when he threw the switch sending power to the park and was nearly electrocuted.
Good. Fuck you.
He was knocked out and left with small burns from the power traveling from his right arm to his left leg. Among the press that day, Topsy was killed was a film crew from the Edison Film Company, possibly directed by Edwin S. Porter or Jacob Blair Smith. A crew shot a 75-second film of Topsy's electrocution. Within a few weeks, it was added to the film's viewable in Edison's kinetoscopes under the title Electrocuting an Elephant, which you can now watch today.
Dude, it's in the Library of Congress. Oh my God. So fucking disgusting to watch. Because it's not short. It's not like 10 seconds long. It's like over a minute. Maybe 2 minutes. It's long.
This was one of the one of many short quote-unquote actuality films shot by Edison Manufacturing Company from 1897 at Coney Island, depicting rides, bathing scenes, diving horses, and elephants.
It's like the predecessor to reality TV. It's actuality films. No, it's reality TV.
It's called TikTok, okay? Topsy was doing it for the Vine.
Topsy was killed to appease the Chinese government need for elephant death on its platform.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
The Edison Company submitted the film.
What the kids like to watch. Saturday morning, you mentioned, see like 2-3 elephants getting killed by South Americans playing Mortal Kombat.
just so many elephant fatalities. It's disgusting.
Ganesh wins.
Who would win, the elephant or riding with his electricity? All right, let me stop.
That's good. Yeah. Oh, shit, dude. You need to make a Salty Bet character. Have you ever been on Salty Bet?
No, but I've seen it.
Oh, dude, such a great website, dude. Just get toked up, have a friend over, and sit there and place bets on which character's going to win. It's amazing.
The Edison Company submitted the film to the Library of Congress as a paper print, which is a photographic record of each frame of the film for copyright purposes. The submission may have saved the film for posterity, since most films and negatives of this period were usually destroyed over time by decay. Electrocuting an Elephant does not seem to have been as popular as other Edison films of the period.
Oh, and you don't fucking say.
It's like nobody wanted to watch it for some reason. I don't know.
Interesting. God, I wonder what could
have been. And could not be viewed at Luna Park because the attraction did not have the necessary coin-operated kinetoscopes to view it. The film and Topsy's story fell into relative obscurity in the intervening years and appeared as an out-of-context clip in the 1979 film Mr. Mike's Mondo Video. In 1991, documentary maker Rick Burns made the film Coney Island, which included a segment recounting the death of Topsy, including clips from the film Electrocuting an Elephant. In 1999, autopsy was commemorated in the Coney Island Mermaid Parade in a parade float by artist Gavin Heck. In 2003, Heck and local arts groups held a competition to select a memorial arts piece to commemorate the 100th anniversary of Topsy's death. The chosen piece, created by New Orleans artist Lee Dygard and exhibited at the Coney Island USA Museum, allowed the public to view electrocuting an elephant on a hand-cranked mutoscope while surrounded by hanging chains and standing on a copper plate. In later years, portions of electrocuting an elephant have appeared in movies, music videos, TV shows, and video games. The theme of Topsy's electrocution also appears in songs, in the plotline of several novels, and a poem such as by U.S. Poet Laureate W.S. Merwin's The Chain to Her Leg.
Damn, man.
In popular culture, Topsy is often portrayed as being electrocuted in public demonstration organized by Thomas Edison during the War of the Currents to show the dangers of alternating current.
I mean, is the reality? Yeah, that's a, I've seen that. I've heard of that before.
But that's not entirely true, because examples of this view include a 2008 Wired magazine article titled "Edison Fries an Elephant to Prove His Point,"
right,
and a 2013 episode of Bob's Burgers titled "Topsy."
Yeah, this was like a whole like Tesla thing, AC versus DC thing.
But yeah, the events surrounding Topsy took place 10 years after the end of this quote-unquote war.
Right.
At the time of Topsy's death, Edison was no longer involved in the electric lighting business. He had been forced out of control of his company by its 1892 merger with General Electric and sold all his stock in GE during the 1890s to finance an iron ore refining venture.
How'd that work out for him? Because I feel like he'd be better to keep all his GE stock.
Yeah, like, GE stock was really good until, like, 1980.
Is it not good anymore?
You can still make a little bit every year, but it's not as good as it used to be.
Well, GE used to be really good, and, like, my grandfather worked for GE, and he had, like, a GE pension.
Yeah.
And it was, like, the gold standard of pensions, like, the one he had.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, it all just got hollowed out by, I don't think Jack Welch did at GE, but I think they followed Jack Welch. And just that whole culture of, like, we're just going to, like, destroy pensions out of corporate greed.
Yep.
I want to go interview, like, 121-year-old kids and be like, hey, what is a pension? And just see how many of them actually know what the fuck it is.
Like, it was, like, a decade ago when I had a family member was talking to me about that, like, pensions and, like, how you should, you know, try to get a job, you get a retirement, a pension, and I just had this, like, an instant response. I was like, they don't exist. I was like,
that's not a thing unless you are a public service employee.
To be either public service, like, usually police officers are considered to have one of the best.
Well, usually federal to get a pension most of the time, because, like, Florida State has been, like, phasing out the pension for, like, over a decade.
Right.
They've tried to force workers to not take it, and they're trying to, like, sundown it.
Yeah, they want to get rid of it just like they wanted to get rid of unions. It's ridiculous. Like, what benefits do you have to stay at an employee, as an employee at a job for
But the fucked up thing is, but the fucked up thing is, like, a retirement plan as we know, like a 401k, like, that is meant to augment a pension.
Exactly.
Like it is not designed as a standalone system. It is designed as a supplement.
That's the volts amps argument of pensions. It's like,
isn't it convenient how
401ks are not meant to be your sole like security in retirement? You're supposed to have something.
Isn't
else.
It convenient how capitalism has fucked that? Because like we're not paying pensions and contributing to a 401k. They can live off a quarter of what they're designed to live off,
dude. It's ridiculous. First of all, the 401k, it's only good if you can put a certain amount into it every year. And really, most financial analysts will tell you to just, if you can't max it out, then you shouldn't invest in anything else. So, like, you would have to be putting your max amount in your 401k every year for it to really be a retireable thing. Otherwise, mm-hmm. it's just a cash source in retirement. In mm-hmm. addition to Social Security, which they're pushing back so far that it's like, when are you gonna fucking collect it? Like, by the time you're 70? What the fuck? I mean,
some talking head was like, you're getting too comfortable with retiring at 65. You need to work till you're 75. I'm like, what the fuck?
People are getting, you know, they're healthier and they can take it more. That's not the point. Like, that's got nothing to fuck you trying to control.
Your life expectancy's going up. Why shouldn't your work expectancy go up?
Yeah, like, fuck you. I will choke you. Fuck you.
I was gonna say, that just That just sounds like something someone would say if they want to get their ass.
And we also have this dumbass like culture of like, well, I worked till I was 74 at the steel mill. Good, you're a sucker. Like, what
I
the
work
fuck?
37 like, hour days.
Yeah, you're a sucker. And
65
you
hours a week.
And you
up.
Probably don't support unions. And you fucking think that they're evil, but here you are.
Yeah, you laugh at unions.
You're just a fucking...
The union's like, please, let us give you working conditions
that are fair. You're just a bargaining
chip
in some corporate fucking algebra, you fuck. It's fucking ridiculous.
I don't want to pay into no union, don't do nothing for me. I'd rather get black lung and die in this coal mine. All right, you fucking moron.
It's not even uniquely American either. It's just a stupid male attitude.
Hey, ask any UPS, FedEx, DHL... most Amazon drivers, ask them about unions.
Mm-hmm.
Ask them. And then they're going to be like, oh, I work 4 days a week, 6 hours a day. My boss is not allowed to say shit to me unless I have a union rep. I get left the fuck alone. I get yearly pay raises. I get the best health insurance money could buy next to the president. And then these other fucking dickheads are like, but unions don't do shit for me, bro. I'm like, all right, bro.
Oh, yeah, because I lost my union. The head of my where I work, he even made the comment, like, well, now that the unions are out of the way, I can negotiate for you. And it's like, well, you weren't going to fucking negotiate with us to begin with.
Yeah,
like, you fucking idiot.
Like,
there is somebody
up.
In the union whose express job is to make the best deal for us that they humanly possible. Your job is to make the best deal for the company as humanly possible.
No one at administration in my job has ever advocated for anyone at the, like, the staff level.
No, because...
And I will even, like... say that to them to their face in the middle of like an all staff meeting.
He's going
and say that
record.
They're full of shit. Yeah, like
record.
I will. I running hot.
Yeah, yeah. Of course they haven't because they're worried about getting fired too. Because that's the whole thing. It's just a fear based economy anymore. Fucking stupid.
Well, they also don't care because they all make like six figures.
Exactly.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. That's the big one too. Our administration.
Which it's all that they're like. I'm not going to speak for these people because I don't want to get in trouble. It's like I'm not going to bother because I'm comfortable. And, like, they don't even consider what the people under them are making, so it doesn't even become an issue for them. They just go about their lives because, you know, they're fully, like, actualized. Mm. And, you know, they can take vacations to, like, France. You know, they can go to Paris while, like, the people under them are worrying about how they're going to, like, make all their payments for the month.
Yep.
They're taking a week off for vacation every month and then wondering why everybody else's mental health isn't like theirs. Well, it's like, well, I'm making a third of what you are. Shut up.
But to get back to it, the Brooklyn company that still bore Edison's name, mentioned in newspaper reports, was a privately owned power company no longer associated with his earlier Edison Illuminating Company. Edison himself was not present at Luna Park when the film was made. It is unclear as to the input he had in Topsy's death or its filming, since the Edison Manufacturing Film Company made over 1,200 short films during the period, with very little or no guidance from Edison as to how they were filmed. A journalist, Michael Dowley, in his 2013 book on Topsy, surmises that Edison would have been pleased by the proper positioning of the copper plates and that the elephant was killed by the large Westinghouse AC generators at Bay Ridge, but he shows no evidence of any actual contact or communication between the owners of Luna Park and Edison concerning Topsy.
You know that psychopath Edison would have loved to see that.
I'm sure he would have liked to, like, eat it or something. Like, it would have been like a Mr. Burns thing, like, where he'd just be like,
it's great, she's
lips.
Already cooked, bring her to me. She's already cooked, I don't gotta do anything else. Bring her right here. Okay, come on.
When his, like, Smithers, like, sir, they fry the elephant. He's just licking his
good.
Lips. He's like, excellent. Excellent. Two things that may have indelibly linked Thomas Edison with Topsy's death were the primary newspaper sources describing it as being carried out by, quote-unquote, electricians of the Edison Company, which also led to the eventual confusing of the unrelated power company with the man, and the fact that the film of the event, like most Edison films from that period, was credited on screen as a, quote-unquote, Thomas A. Edison film, although Edison himself had no actual involvement in the production.
Right, okay.
So, like, while it's sort of put out as, like, you know, it was part of this war between, like, AC and DC and Edison and Westinghouse, but in reality, like, Edison was, like, this is after that fact,
yep.
And this is just sort of tied in to, like, sort of, like, sell this sort of, like, romantic story
well,
of
I
this,
think,
like, feud.
I think it ended in, like, the late 60s, and maybe, and that was No, it was like mid-70s when a man named Bon Scott joined AC/DC to form one of the greatest rock groups of all time.
Jesus Christ.
let's just say that people were quote-unquote thunderstruck.
Let's just say that people were just shocked by how big this man's balls were. He even said it. He said he had big balls. Yeah.
I believe he also noted that they were big brass balls.
Yes, that's true.
And the next one we're going to talk about is a wrongly convicted animal who was actually not really convicted in a court of law, but convicted in the court of public opinion. And this is one Pep.
Oh no. Pep? Why'd you say it like Trump says certain words? You know what his name was, folks? Pep. Pep.
I do that. I bring my hands China. Close to my mouth when I say it, and I like clench my fingers. Say, Pep.
Crooked Joe, you know, Biden.
When Pep was at New York Fashion Week, you know, people said he looked like a dog, and I said, he is a dog.
Oh, man.
So Pep was a Labrador Retriever born around 1923.
I'm fucking and mad was given, as shit right now.
I'm already mad because I don't like this.
This is more of a feel-good story. It's not that bad.
Steve, you broke us down. Now you got to build us up. You did it in reverse.
Yeah, I'm going to build you back up. Yeah. That's what we do at
you
the Trilateral Troika.
You're supposed to build up before you break us down, but at the Trilateral Troika, we break your ass down before we build you up.
I totally forgot about Topsy, too. Like, I totally forgot about the details of
Ryan's
going
to have another weird dream tonight. Call us. Yeah. Sweating.
You know, we're just like a cult. We're just going to emotionally, like, destroy you and then bring you back up through, like, love bombing and other things to, like...
Again, thanks, bombing. Steve. I had totally forgot about Topsy until tonight.
So, as I mentioned, Pep was a Labrador Retriever born around 1923, and he was given as a gift to the Pennsylvania governor, Gifford Pinchot, from the nephew of his wife, Cornelia... Bryce Pinchot.
Bronson Pinchot? You mean Balky Bartokomus?
Pinochet? What?
Pinchot.
Pinochet. He just killed everything he ever loved.
you see his like portrait in the governor's mansion, and it's that one with like Pinochet where he's wearing like the aviator sunglasses.
Ugh.
Or he's wearing Wayfarers. He's wearing, like, Wayfarer sunglasses with, like, all the other generals, like, flanked around him. Pep joined the Pinchot family at Gray Towers residence in Milford, Pennsylvania, during the governor's first term. According to Pinchot, quote-unquote, he belonged to my son, Giff, and was distinguished by the fact that he was anybody and everybody's dog. Pep was described by Pinchot in a July 1924 letter as... about a year and a half old, exceedingly friendly and good-natured, rather unusually intelligent and very quiet, though he chewed on the cushions of the sofa that sat on the front porch.
So he was a dog.
Yes.
a well-behaved dog. Gotcha.
Pinchot was inspired by the example set by Maine Governor Percival Baxter, who had recently sent his coolie, Governor, to the Thomaston State Prison to serve as a therapy dog.
His what?
His coolie. His Chinese coal mine worker.
Yeah, his Chinese labor. But no, a coolie is a type of like dog. I think it's like a whippet type dog.
A coolie is a type of dog.
Yeah, it's like a collie.
Are you talking about a fucking collie? You've been trying to pronounce all these like words for fucking France and everything else for so long, you forgot simple collie.
No, I think there is a coolie. Yes. It begins with a K, though.
Well, no, it is a collie.
Oh, is it? No, but there, you know what's crazy about that is you could have just played it off and said that there is a dog named Coolie.
Well, I was thinking about those like dogs that have like the cornrows. You know what I'm talking about?
Gwen Stefani. Oh man, I love Gwen Stefani. I'm sorry,
sitting here
Gwen.
Like this man pronounces Asian, Russian, Spanish, every kind of ethnic name that doesn't have enough vowels, and he's like coolie. Oh fucking what?
But anyways, the colony governor was sent to Thomaston State Prison to serve as therapy dog, which just blew me away too. That even in like the 1920s, they're sending like therapy dogs when they're like Like, yeah, we regularly starve and beat the prisoners in order to improve their like,
that is weird,
rehabilitation.
Give them a dog to pet.
The Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia had become overcrowded during this period, and the inmates had low morale. Cornelia Pinchot made a telephone call to Colonel John C. Broom, the warden of the penitentiary, to ask if the prisoners would like a dog as a pet. Governor Pinchot wrote a letter to the warden on July 29th, 1924, offering up Pep to the institution. Pep would be taken by the penitentiary in August of 1924. He was received in quote-unquote due and ancient form, and on August 31st was given to inmate number C2559 and had his mugshot and paw prints taken. It was entered into the public prison ledger. You can actually see his mugshot.
Oh, God damn it. Hang on.
The entry listed his crime as murder, his alias as quote-unquote a dog, and his sentence as life imprisonment. The prison supervisor of rehabilitation, E. Preston Sharp, provided a transcript of Pep's formal citation in the prison ledger, C-2559, Pep, parentheses, a dog, received 8-31-24 from Pike County, Pennsylvania, all black, Chesapeake Retriever, sent by Governor Gifford Pinchot, quote-unquote, in life term for killing the governor's pet cat.
He's really got a mugshot.
Jeez.
Following Pep's arrival at the penitentiary, newspapers picked up on the story, seizing on the detail that the dog had been sent to prison for killing one of the governor's cats. Pep was characterized as a quote-unquote cat-murdering dog, and journalists embellished the tale with claims that the cat had belonged to his wife, or that there had been a trial where Pinchot served as judge and jury. Pinchot wrote the newspapers to clarify that Pep had not killed a cat and was sent to the penitentiary so that, quote-unquote, the lot of prisoners would be lightened. Despite the clarification, the governor received hundreds to thousands of letters about the imprisonment of the dog. He relayed that, quote-unquote, some newspaper men, drawing strictly and solely on his imagination, wrote a story to the effect that the dog had been condemned to prison because he killed a cat. That wretched tale went literally all over the world. I got letters from every quarter of the globe denouncing my inhuman cruelty and condemning the poor beast to imprisonment merely because he had followed his instincts. These letters came largely to judge the handwriting from ladies of certain age. They kept coming all through the rest of my term. I never saw a better illustration of the impossibility of catching up with a lie harmless as this lie was intended to be.
See, this is a good governor. This is a good governor who understands the role of the penal system is more than just punishment. It's also rehabilitation. He's giving the inmates a dog to, what do you say, to lighten their load or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, Ron DeSantis would go to prisons and give these motherfuckers bed bugs if he could.
Yep.
Like, he would mail them envelopes full of bed bugs. You understand what I'm saying? Like,
you ain't this is, never
this
lie.
This is what a governor should be doing. This is what a good governor does.
Pinchot would read some of the letters to his family with one of the best concluding...
You know what's funny? Is someone else in this world right now probably made the exact opposite argument that you just made about, like a DeSantis supporter?
Yeah.
I love it. He's giving them bed bugs. That's hilarious. I'm voting for
They're
this man.
They're just ungrateful.
I am voting for this man.
These ingrates just can't appreciate what their great governor's doing.
You know, in my darker hours, I often think about giving inmates bed bugs.
Every night before I go to bed, I get on my knees and I pray to the good Lord above. Please, God, give all the nice inmates bed bugs.
This has been a reading from next door.
Jesus. Jesus. Exactly.
Praise be he, she, them, they.
I just heard a gunshot. You guys need to go to church.
Well, there was one post recently that was like trending, and it was about all these people talking about squatters up north stealing their houses. I know they wouldn't last 5 minutes in my town.
Oh my God. Ugh.
Okay.
Okay. Fucking tough guys on internet warriors.
Pinchot read some of the letters to his family, with one of the best concluding, "Any day, any dog is better than any politician anyway."
100%.
Cornelia Pinchot later tried to clear up the misconception that Pep was sentenced to life in prison. In a January 1926 New York Times article, she was quoted as saying, "Why, Pep never killed anything or anybody. The report of his crime was circled half around the world, and the governor and I have received volumes of letters, telegrams, resolutions, and petitions complaining of the cruelty of cooping the dog up in prison." Periodically, the mugshot of Pep with a prisoner number would reappear in print. Pinchot's son also wrote to local newspapers in an attempt to correct the misinformation about Pep being a cat murderer. Pep, during his time in prison, would wander the prison grounds freely and was well-liked by both prisoners and guards. He served as a mascot for the prison and was intended to boost the morale of the prisoners as a therapy dog. An article in the Philadelphia Inquirer opined, "No despairing man brooding in his cell can feel that he is forgotten by God and man, who will feel Pep's loving tongue caressing his languid hand." In 1925, Pep was featured in a radio program that was broadcast from the penitentiary and aired on WIP. The Boston Daily Globe published an article on December 26, 1925, with a photograph of Pep sitting in front of a radio microphone while surrounded by prison guards.
That's excellent.
Pep accompanied guards on their nightly rounds and excelled at catching rats in the prison corridors. According to Sharp, he was, quote-unquote, "was quite fast for his size and weight, weight unknown, though heavy, being the equal of smaller and lighter dogs."
Okay, fat shame here. We don't fat shame.
In addition, he was very svelte.
He was streamlined, okay.
In addition to the rats and his regular meals, Pep was fed morsels by inmates and guards alike. He gained weight and by 1927 was put on a diet. Pinchot visited the prison and Pep on several occasions. The governor related that he had seen Pep, quote-unquote, "in the penitentiary a number of times, and he was fat and healthy, but toward the end of his career he developed a partiality toward the officials of the institution and was with them more than the prisoners." Pep stayed at Eastern State Penitentiary until as late as 1929. During his later time at the prison, he may have joined work crews sent to construct the Greaterford prison farm about 30 miles north of Philadelphia, established in 1929. Pep's time at the penitentiary probably did not coincide with that of Al Capone, who was transferred there on August 8, 1929.
Was that Capone's final resting place? Was the Eastern Penitentiary?
Capone died in freedom.
Oh, he did?
Because there's that whole thing about how he had...
They do, like, the Halloween thing every year. My brothers used to go to it all the time.
I thought he died at his, like, one estate because he was...
He was released for, like, care reasons or whatever because he was basically dying of gonorrhea.
Because there's that whole thing about syphilis.
Went to his brain.
And he was, fishing in the swimming pool.
Yeah, he was no longer able to serve a punishment because he was mentally fucked.
Oh, okay.
So let him out.
Pep, during his time, would grow close with J.C. Burke, the captain of the night guard at the prison. In 1929, Pep was quote-unquote pardoned and transferred to the prison farm at Greaterford.
Oh, he went to a farm upstate, huh?
In 1935, he just went to a prison farm upstate. A 1935 newspaper article related that Pep had grown quote-unquote too fat and unwieldy and ancient for active prison service, and was, quote-unquote, allowed to spend the rest of his days at the home of a retired guard who begged leave to care for him in his old age. Pep died in May or June of 1930 and was buried in a flower bed on prison grounds. A wooden marker was placed on the grave, but was later swept away in a flash flood. The Eastern State Penitentiary, later converted to a museum, has a placard for Pep as one of the quote-unquote notable inmates and sells stuffed animals of him in the shop.
Interesting. So they sell stuffed animals, huh?
So you, if you go to the Eastern State Penitentiary, you can get your own pep doll.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember that at all. But I never went because I was a big baby. So you laugh, but
I mean, it's better. It's better than the elephant death. But yeah,
No, it's definitely better.
The fact that he turned into a fucking cop at the end and want to hang out with the goddamn guards more than the prisoners.
Well, calm down. It's a fucking
sellout.
It's a fucking dog. It's a dog. Calm down.
Now, if they wanted to be fair with Topsy, what they should have done was they should have gotten two locomotives. They should have tied him to both of them, Jesus. Each going different directions.
I think you send Topsy in to get the Holy Grail ahead of Indiana Jones, you know? She'd never make it past the big slicer wheel.
Well, Why don't they just put Topsy on a boat and send her back?
If she got to, like, the last part, she just knock around that immortal knight and just, like, throw all the cups.
Jesus comes down. My cups! Oh, my God.
Well, only one of them is, but still. On that note,
that's
boys.
The story of all these animals on
reasonable. Well, we gotta stop him somewhere because he'll just keep going, you know.
Yeah, if we're not tough on animal crime, Ryan, they're just gonna run rampant. I read next door. I know what's going on.
You gotta line these pit bulls up against the wall and shoot them with an axe gun.
I just have a gun that shoots swords.
Shoots axes.
And I want to use it against these pit bulls.
Yeah. It's like Castlevania. Well, you ever seen that? It's like that.
Well, on that note, then, I'm definitely going to go boot up some Helldivers and go shoot some bugs for democracy.
Oh, my God. I got to try that. Is it good?
Oh, my God.
I need to get a 2 for PS5.
Oh, my God. Good? Yes, it's so fucking good.
It's so good. All right, on that note, good night.
Good night.
Bye.